Hello, everybody. Welcome to Comedy Film Reds episode 331, a third of the way to 993.
And back from Comic-Con.
Hey! And,
as always, exhausted, but we brought a fellow Comic-Con soldier with us today.
It was fun. Thanks, everyone that came out. It was really cool.
We love doing that panel. The
Rick Meyers panel was so great, especially, you know, so you had Eric Jacobus on it, and he showed a clip from his new short, Blinded.
Blindsided.
I've mispronounced it 1,000 times. Blindered. He did his movie Blindered, which was cool. He plays a blind guy, sort of an inspiration from all the Zatoichi films.
Right.
And that was really cool. And of course, James Liu was on the panel.
He's awesome.
So James Liu did the choreography for the new Marvel Netflix Luke Cage,
yes,
the Power Man, which I was so pumped to hear about because I used to get Power Man and Iron Fist as a subscription when I remember when I was a kid, and I was like, you could get comics sent to your house.
I know, right? Mailed right to your
door. A mail guy shows up and gives you a comic book.
It's like, in its own sleeve,
it's
too.
It's crazy. I thought that was the craziest thing. So I would get Spider-Man and Power Man, Iron Fist. So James Liu did the choreography on that. He also, as I've talked about, did the choreography on The Martial Arts Kid, the low budget film that I got to watch, and I talked about it on the panel. I got to watch him work on the final fight scene in Martial Arts Kid between Don the Dragon Wilson and TJ Storm is choreographed by James Liu. So I was on the set, you know, because I'm like a security guard and I had like two lines or whatever. And I got to watch them because it's low budget. They shot the whole movie in 2.5 weeks. They got four cameras working. And it was like...
And not the same four cameras either. It was like, wasn't it like there was a small camera and then there was like a red? Didn't you say it was
All different types of cameras. And because they didn't have the time... There was no budget to do a single camera shoot of a fight scene.
Right.
So they had to just do this fight and then capture it from all these different angles. And so they were, he was doing fight choreography on the set. And because you're watching three really amazing martial artists, three professionals, three guys that have been in probably hundreds of films combined, you know, TJ Storm does a lot of mocap like that. That's he, you know, so a lot of video game mocap stuff and, you know, Don the Dragon Wilson has done 60 or 70 movies or something like that, you know? So it was amazing watching them. I get to watch the guy that trained Luke Cage work on a low budget, martial arts. So that was cool. That's what's so great about the Rick Meyers, superhero Kung Fu extravaganza is I've met amazing people through that. I mean, we met Eric. That was cool. And the people coming out. And it's so fun, too, because Rick picks, you know, he picks some movies that, some Hong Kong films from the 70s that are being, you know, redone and sold. And one of them was Kung Fu versus Yoga, which is one of the most amazing movies I've ever seen.
He said it was going to be in that trailer compilation that he was working on, too, which looks really, oh my God. It's like you'd think, well, nobody actually made that movie. No, there's
the
trailer.
It's out there. We saw it, man. We saw this yogi who could put his, you know, his leg behind his neck, behind his back. And so his foot is like out next to
his ear.
And then he's kicking a dude in a fight. It was unbelievable. It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Like, where do I get that full movie? So that was awesome. And then got to see, you know, I went by Jonathan London's booth.
Geekscape.
That was cool. I ran into a listener, Craig Rasmussen, who's also a comic book.
Yes.
He's an artist and went by his booth. They were doing cool stuff down there. And then you know, all of the trailers that were released that we're going to talk about them for sure. And in addition to Star Trek Beyond.
Well, let's introduce our guest then. We'll get into it. Ladies and gentlemen, the host of Comics on Comics, and you guys have been doing this podcast for many years now.
Off and on.
You know, there's been a couple of hiatuses, some host changes, but you never stop, which is awesome. You persevere, and you've done it for many years.
8 years now.
Ladies and gentlemen, Juan Manuel Rocha.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Thanks for coming back.
Oh, dude, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I love you guys. I love the show. any opportunity to come down.
And a big Comic-Con, another veteran. You're there the whole time.
I'm there the whole time. I showed up on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. I pick up my passes at 3 o'clock, right. And basically from Wednesday to Sunday, it's like 96 straight hours of work. Yeah. You know. Mm-hmm.
So before we're going to talk about the specific trailers later in the show, but overall, so you've been going to Comic-Con for how many years now?
My very first Comic-Con was 93.
Okay. Have you gone every year since then, or most?
No, so I've missed a lot. I mean, I was 13 in 93. Oh, right. Yeah, so I missed a whole bunch, but I've probably been.
How dare you? But okay.
Wait, hey, it took a lot of convincing from my mom, like to convince my mom to allow a 13-year-old and my 11-year-old brother to go by ourselves to San Diego for a day. Right? That was never going to happen. But I kept asking. And I had a friend who lived in San Diego, so I had been there before. So I had been on the train, and I knew how to get, and I knew that from the train station to the convention center was just a trolley ride away.
Right.
So I was able to convince my mom that, look, I'm going to hop on the train, I'm going to hop on the trolley, I'm going to be there, then I'm going to hop on the trolley, I'm going to hop on the train, and I'm back. Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, fine. And she allowed me.
She was like, I don't want to go.
Oh, absolutely. Of course not. You know, it's probably the most boring thing in the world for them. Mm-hmm. But at 13, I loved it. And my brother loved it. And it was the most amazing thing in the world. Like walking through door A when you're a kid and seeing this, seeing the largest convention in the world of the things you love.
Right.
That is the most amazing feeling in the world.
Especially that first time.
Absolutely. You know, I'm 13, I've got my little brother there, and we've got money in our, like more money than I've ever had in my pocket ever at one time. And I'm like, oh my God. And my mom gave me the credit card just in case.
Oh,
so good.
And there weren't 10 million people there.
There weren't. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you were walking around. One of the things I've seen since 93 is the rise of females attendees, female working. Mm-hmm. And people always say, oh, you know, Comic-Con is losing the comic bookness. It's all being taken over. The reality is the comic book section of Comic-Con has never really changed in size. It's just that everything else is getting so much bigger.
Right.
You can still spend your entire time only doing comic book things at Comic-Con.
Right. But it's interesting that it's split up, like, we'll get into it a little bit more, but the comic book sections are on the far sides of the convention floor. Like, for one side, it's Artist Alley, where Graham was talking about, where you see the artist and the drawing. They could do commissions for you, whatever. Then on the other side are all, like, the publishers and books and comic book retailers. But then in the middle is, like, all the movies and toy companies. So it's weird that they still kind of separate them a little bit, but they're still there. There's still a presence.
Absolutely.
It's not like they got overwhelmed. Just like you said, everything else got bigger.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's just an influx of casual fans.
Right.
You know, when you know, in 93, everybody kind of knew everything, you know, because it was just a small concentration. Mm-hmm. And now people are just there to discover. You know, people who've never read comic books are picking things up, and I think it's awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, whole families are going. There are people who go down to Comic-Con who can't even get in, but spend this amazing time at Comic-Con.
I mean, that's the thing, too. Like, and we've talked about it, you know, in the last couple of years of how they've really expanded into the city of San Diego. And one of the cool things, like, I was a part of this Screen Junkies panel. Because Doug Benson's doing this new show on Screen Junkies, and they just took over a bar.
Yeah.
That was like where they have live music. And so they just put this panel up there and they just made it the Screen Junkies hub. And, you know,
anybody could go in. You didn't need a badge.
Anyone can go in. And it's all Screen Junkies branded stuff, but they do, you know, they do honest trailers and they do really cool things there. And then, you know, so I was on with Jonah Ray and this woman, Claire from, she was on Buffy and stuff like that. I forget her last name. I'm blanking on it right now, but we were on, we talked about the con and then we played a couple games. Like we played a game from Doug Loves Movies, which was fun. And then after our panel, Danny McBride was on a panel talking about the Vice Principal show that's coming out.
Right.
And I was like, that's not even on the convention floor. That is, that was just an awesome, those two panels were really cool. Because I was just watching the Danny McBride panel after hours, which was great. And
you see a fraction of what is actually at Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah. There's no way one person can do everything. Right. So, you know,
and all the hotels, everything now, like even the hotels next to the convention center have a whole list of panels and programs and theaters downtown. There's bars and restaurants, yeah. like you're talking about. Like sometimes they're completely bought out. Like we, you know, the kid, I brought my kids with me for the couple of days. We thought, oh, maybe Wednesday won't be as crowded. Nope, just as crowded.
Yep.
Doesn't matter anymore. But Thursday, like, because they saw some of the stuff being built, they're like, oh, we want to go through like the Suicide Squad, you know, the little walkthrough thing. And then there's like, there was actually one of those, a ride for like Timeless, where it was just one of those centrifugal force spinners. But, you know, we get up the next day, we go, and they're like, what's that line for? That's the line that people got up at 7 a.m. to get in to just to see the Suicide Squad walkthrough exhibit.
Wow.
And they said it's probably about a five-hour wait, the line. Just to get in, you know, to do a little bit of virtual reality, to see, like, the Belgrade prison that they built in there. Mm. It's not like even any of the stars are there. It's just, it's a walkthrough. So... it's amazing too that people just, you know, they'll wait in line just for that.
Absolutely.
They built South Park down there. Did you see that?
Yes, they built South Park, you know, Adult Park Swim.
Plus was cool. Yeah,
they built the entire town.
Yeah.
You could walk through. It was amazing.
There are now different conventions. There are smaller conventions that are happening a part of Comic-Con now.
It's like Sundance, Slam Dance. You know,
yeah, all the festivals in Park City during the week of Sundance. It's the same. It's like the other thing too. Like, and I've talked about in the past too. There's that little park next to Petco.
Yes,
so Petco that's where the Padres play. But they do events inside Petco during Comic Con, and then next to it, this little park that had like the Conan O'Brien interactive thing. It had this Jack in the Box interactive thing that was amazing. And this awesome
with zombies,
and then it had this vegan barbecue place that I ate at that was fantastic.
Wow. I will say this year that area was a little less than it usually is.
It wasn't very packed.
I remember when we went there once, there was like an entire like museum of like superhero cars and all these amazing things.
Yeah.
This year was a little light, and we did go into the Evil Dead house though. That was fun.
Nice.
We went in there and I got a t-shirt and. But there was definitely stuff there, but that felt like, did some couple people not show up for this? Cause there was like this whole area that was empty over there.
Yeah. Well, it's not empty. It was parking.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, cause they had, you know, Adult Swim had these giant, you know,
inflatable things
at one point. So it was a little light, but, let's take a little break from talking, Comic-Con and go Star Trek. Then we'll get back into it.
Okay. We're going to do a Star Trek spoiler.
We are.
Yeah.
All right, we are. Let's do it.
So we won't get into the spoils. I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to quote my girlfriend, who's a huge Star Trek fan.
Okay.
She's a very big Next Gen fan. In fact, she bought a Wesley Willis glass.
Crusher? Wesley Crusher?
Wesley Crusher, I'm sorry. Wesley Crusher. She's going to kill me for that. She found a Wesley Crusher. She's like, look what I got. I was just like, you're adorable. You're the only one. They had one in stock.
We'll bring one a year. Yeah. It only sells to one person.
Yeah.
She bought Next Gen comic books. Not that expensive.
What a surprise.
But I love the original series. I love the original movies. I've always kind of liked Next Gen. But she summed it up great, in my opinion. She said it's a great action movie. It's a terrible Star Trek film. Because it has no Star Trek. It's very...
Star Trek films are bad Star Trek films. I mean, the new series. They're not Star Trek.
They're not. They're just action movies.
Yeah.
There's fun action stuff, and they just sort of sprinkle in a little, but there's no social commentary. There's no the Star Trek shows, and even the Shatner movies were very smart. Not all of them, but
they had very very good writers behind them.
Right,
too. You had like classic science fiction writers actually writing these episodes
because it's born out of Gene Roddenberry. That show was groundbreaking. Mm-hmm. The original series. Now, granted, the original series also had a lot of sexism in it and stuff like that, which they've worked to try to get around.
It was a product of the time.
It was a product of the time.
Ways.
But it also had, as we've talked about, like the first black woman in a position of power. She was a lieutenant. I mean, like the classic story. Dr. King told her, you got to do this show.
And if you ever get the...
first interracial kiss.
Yep. The box set of the Star Trek, the original series. There's all these great... behind the scenes and extras on every single disc, and it gets into that. And
the race episode. Remember the race episode where you had this alien race, and one side the right side of their face was black and their left side was white. And then the other side, the right side was white and the other side was black. And they hated each other.
With the Riddler.
Yeah.
That's Frank Gorshin. Right,
Frank Gorshin. Yeah. But it was like, that was such an amazing episode that was made in the middle of the civil rights era.
Right.
And God, we could really use that now. And it was such great commentary on race, how ridiculous it is.
In one of the interviews, they said, it's like, we get what you're doing. You're doing little morality plays in the cover of science fiction. And that was always the basis of each episode.
It's there was the Vietnam episode where there was this little planet of like tribal people, and the Klingons and the Federation were funding two warring tribes. So the Federation and the Klingon were battling each other. And Gene Roddenberry providing weapons for each other. Very much told, he said, this is the Vietnam episode. The Soviet Union is funding North Vietnam. We're funding the South. Mm-hmm. And he goes, that kind of stuff is groundbreaking. The Next Generation has so many really smart episodes. Yeah. And even the movies, so you've got, okay, so not all of the movies are great, right? So the joke is the odd ones and the good ones.
Right.
But four, that's a movie about environmentalism. We destroyed the whales and we had to go get them to save the planet. This is always just like...
And it was probably the funniest one too.
Right.
Yeah.
And it had a lot of great social commentary on our current society and the problems with it.
So
and,
I'm going to be a little more generous here. And I actually, I was going to this movie thinking, I am not going to like this movie. I didn't really like the second one. I thought the first one was okay. These trailers look awful. And I'm going to give this movie a little bit of credit. I think it was a step in the right direction. And one of the things that I liked was the way it opened was James Kirk philosophizing. Am I saying that right? Philosophizing. What it meant to be out there and what it meant to be on a journey that may have no end and what's the purpose and all those things. I'm like, oh, that's a really cool
setup. And you can go stir crazy.
Yeah, and that's a really cool setup. And it also, it's a kind of jokes about like, oh, I just always felt episodic, like episodic TV, you know.
Right.
Got it.
Yeah.
But then nothing was ever done with it. Like, then we turned into like, okay, well, now the rest is an action movie. And I thought the best moments of that, of the movie, were when the action was toned down. You know, Justin Lin's not a bad director. He's one of those directors, too, that got kind of caught up in this big Hollywood money. You're going to be doing Fast and the Furious and all that stuff. But if you look at his first initial movie, I think it was Better Luck Tomorrow. It was a really cool kind of indie movie. And that's kind of what put him on the map. And then, you know, they threw him into all these other big budget things. But he can direct actors. He can direct characters. And Simon Pegg really took a great shot at the writing. And it was I really feel like this was a definitely step in the right direction, but it was a small step in the, as far as the franchise goes. It still, way too many things blew up.
Did the Enterprise survive the movie?
No, of course not.
Oh, God,
that's in the opening of the film. But, you know, then I'm like, okay, stop. I mean, it's almost like you get numb when you see so many things blow up and explode. I'm like, stop showing me computerized explosions. I've seen it. I don't need to see it anymore. And I especially don't need to see it in a Star Trek movie.
Right.
So I really felt like there was so much fertile ground that they could have explored, and they started to explore, and then was just abandoned for like, action and quippy lines. But I thought it was really a nice step in the right direction. I will say this, it was the most coherent as a film of all three films, by far. It was definitely, there was more of a beginning, a middle, an end. There was an attempt at a story. It wasn't like just random things just showing up, like, and just random plot holes and points. And I felt like...
So, Juan, you haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it. With Comic-Con, it was, you know, all planning goes to make sure that Comic-Con goes on. So, you know, there's a... Like, I haven't seen a movie in a couple months. Because it's all about Comic-Con.
Yeah.
I kept hearing all of these things. My question is, they said that it's basically a eulogy to both, you know, Spock, but also we just had Anton Yelchin die.
Yes.
You know, and that it was kind of like an homage to him also. They said they're not going to recast the character. So, like,
I don't know if there was a homage to him. They really didn't do anything to...
Okay, yeah, that was the question. People were saying, like, oh, yeah, no, it's an homage to him also and stuff like that. And I was
that's projection.
Okay.
But there is a eulogy to Spock in it for sure, but the problem is it just feels so tacked on. Like it was cool in a kind of like a nostalgic feel to it. Mm-hmm. But it was like, it was, well, I don't know. It's like, I will say, like, it, for Fast and the Furious, the Paul Walker one really felt, it didn't feel tacked on. It really felt like organic to what they were trying to do. And to the rest of the cast. This one was like, well, we're going to kind of do this. I mean,
it might have just, they didn't have the time. They had more time than Fast and Furious to do that.
For sure. But it was like, oh, it was okay. It just felt a little tacked on, but it was, it's an okay scene.
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into the spoiler up. I had fun at the movie. I had fun watching it. Mm-hmm. I watched it in 3D at the Chinese theater, which it doesn't.
Oh, well, it must've been crazy with all that stuff coming out of the screen, like the action.
Little bit. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. I was expecting, waiting a little more. The closing credit sequence is all digital 3D, and that was really cool. And I was like, maybe they should have made the whole movie like that.
Right.
So I don't know that you need to see this in 3D. But the thing that it's been sort of noticing online is like people that aren't diehard Star Trek fans are like, that was awesome.
Right. If you don't have the history of knowing the characters and all those things,
if you're a diehard fan, you're a little more critical of. Like, I had fun at the movie, but I felt the same way. Like, these things that were interesting were introduced, and then sort of that was that. Yep. You just sort of moved on from them, and I really wish they would get into I just want more social commentary. That's what those. That's
like
what
a little.
But that's not. Too. That doesn't sell. That's not a tentpole film. You know. It's like, exactly. You know, this philosophical. Journey.
I disagree. I think yes, you're correct. That's what the marketing department is saying, and the studio executives are saying. But imagine if this movie would have had some real serious race issues coming out today. There's a serious. This country is really racist. It's violent. You're seeing all the. It's like we're in a troubled time right now. And had this movie addressed it, it would have been like, wow.
You can have social commentary in tentpole movies.
It's absolutely. Just,
I will say though, it's not as prevalent for much. I mean,
I'm sure it scares the executives away.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Especially, well, we're putting, you know, $100-200 million in this. We can't make it too political.
Right.
You know, there's always that like, note.
But
like Civil War, I mean, had some social commentary in it, but was it a ton? There was more action.
I think it's a missed opportunity based especially on the history of the show.
And the actual, as they would say, the IP of Star Trek.
Well, there's the other Star Trek, what was it, 6, Undiscovered Country? So that was the one where they were trying to admit the Klingons into the Federation.
Right.
And there's the great scene where that commander, and I forget the actor's name, who played, he was actually in To Kill a Mockingbird. I'm going to pull this up right now.
David Warner? No. Gregory Peck?
No. The black guy. Yeah, Gregory Peck. Yeah.
That would have been an amazing movie.
So where... this is driving me crazy.
So was this film, you know, like... So it wasn't a Star Trek film. It's like, so if you judge it on Star Trek's merits, it's not very good.
You know,
but if it's just a space opera, like, is it...
It was basically... The trailer sold most of the movie as to what it was. It was like a bunch of pretty people fighting in space.
Sure.
But I will say, though, it was... There was... Because I was expecting no depth. There was a little more depth than I thought. And again, it was one of those things where you have this interesting setup of these characters and they're questioning themselves, but it just doesn't go anywhere and it never gets explored. It's always in favor of like
and you know, honestly,
hot
it's
people fighting.
It's the third movie. Why would they be questioning themselves? Like, you know, if you're on a 5-year mission, it's not like... You know, the in the beginning you said, oh, well, he had this whole speech about, you know, you go off into space and, you know, well, there's no end.
It's supposed to take place 2.5 years after Star Trek Into Darkness. And there's a little bit of trivia. Okay. Idris Elba actually gave Chris Pine a black eye in the final fight.
Oh, wow. He actually
and,
landed a punch.
Jayla, the alien girl, is based on Jennifer Lawrence's character in Winter's Bone, J-Law. And the release date coincides with the debut of the original series in 1966.
Yeah, it's all good actors, and there's decent stuff, and it's entertaining. So, so The Undiscovered Country, Brock Peters, is the actor who is in To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that's on trial in To Kill a Mockingbird. He plays Admiral Cartwright in Star Trek VI Undiscovered Country. There's this great scene where Kirk has to get over his hatred of the Klingons because those Klingon bastards, they killed my son, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he's talking to Admiral Cartwright, who's a black man, saying the Klingons are the trash of the universe. We can't let them in here. That was such like Gene Roddenberry going, hey, let's talk about race. And it was such an amazing scene. And Kirk, you know, he's captured and he's put on, there's that kangaroo court and they right. play that. And he's trying, Kirk has to overcome his own hatred.
Well, it's a great line when Spock is like, well, Jim, they're dying. You know, because the Klingon race was right. dying. And he's let them die.
Right.
You know, he was wow. still angry.
He's still angry.
Yeah.
And in the movie, he comes over, he overcomes his hatred of them. He overcomes his let them die. Mm-hmm. And it's also Star Trek. It's a lot of fun. It's Kirk and Spock, banging, you know, mm-hmm. banging around the universe, blowing,
and
fighting.
They're still fighting Klingons.
They're still fighting Klingons. But Christopher Plummer plays this awesome, you know, he's got the eye patch that's nailed into his head, and he's just this like grizzled warrior who's just like, mm-hmm. let's just me and you, Kirk, let's go. And it's like, it's fun, it's action, it's Star Trek with amazing social commentary, and I feel like this movie is fun. It's got good action, but then it just has surface. It just has like the cute aspects of Star Trek, and doesn't get into the meat of it.
Every character too is like, well, that's Kirk. This is Kirk light. This is Spock light. This is like, you know, McCoy light. Although they, you know, I'll say Zachary Quinto, I think you say his last name, does a really nice job as Spock for sure. As far as like getting as close to the characters as you can see a real effort. Whereas, you know, with Bones, and like, oh, that sounds more like Simon Pegg than, you know, McCoy.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, the quippy jokes. I'm like, I can do a little better than that.
Yeah.
I mean, there was definitely more stuff that could have been explored. So I have to say I was pleasantly surprised because I had such low expectations in this film. But it was a step in the right direction. But as far as it being part of the Star Trek franchise and part of the Star Trek IP, there's still a long way to go if you're going to make another one. But it's a step in the right direction.
Well, they said
as they got rid of those two dumb, you know, Transformers writers, all of a sudden things started to, this is actually coherent now.
Right.
Yeah. They did say that the next film is going to have Chris Hemsworth in it. So obviously, there's going to be more time travel involved, because he was the dad from he was his dad in the first movie. He was in that scene for like 3 seconds.
Right.
But yeah, so now they're going to bring him back somehow. So now it's going to be, you know,
not
father and son
for time travel or alternate dimensions for sure.
Yeah.
So all right, so we'll get more into it in the spoiler up for sure.
All right, we got a good sponsor this week.
We do. Touch of Modern back again. All sorts of really good stuff. Now you guys probably already bought stuff for Father's Day. Now we're in to the end of July. There is some great stuff. I did buy some beach stuff.
Yep.
You know, last time I was checking out the site.
Speaking of beach stuff, they have now, this is the coolest thing that I've seen, fashionable wetsuits.
Really?
So like wetsuit tops or whatever. Like I was just surfing this morning and I just have, it's just long sleeve shirt top basically. That's like a 2 millimeter wetsuit material.
Is it still considered a rash guard or is it?
That's considered like a wetsuit top. A rash guard doesn't insulate you.
I see.
A wetsuit technically is supposed to keep you warm.
Mm.
So they have these fashionable wetsuits, and some of them look like cardigan sweaters, and tank tops, and izods, and they're hilarious, but they're really cool
looking.
They're
actual wetsuits.
They're actually wetsuits that look, of course, they're from probably a French company from Saint-Jacques. That's got to be the French one. The wetsuit is too ugly. Like, make it fancy looking. So they got cool stuff like that.
You must look good when you wipe out.
Yeah, exactly. And they got a really cool wireless charging station for all of your iPhones and stuff like that or whatever. So there's
some great artwork, some really cool stuff.
Yeah. Minimalist state posters, which is cool. Like New York, they just have an apple on it. California just has a bear. There's some really cool artwork. There's these unbreakable sunglasses.
Yes.
That are like twistable. It's really cool. And of course, a nice hunting.
Do they have
knife.
A survival knife?
They do have a survival knife, Chris. As
they always do.
Always do. They have a eliminate the odors of your shoes. You put your stinky gym shoes in this thing called the Stink Boss.
Nice.
Eliminates odors.
And there's new sales launching every day. Touch of Modern is the one website to discover really cool things in a single click. And what's really great is there's no fee to sign up. You can just check it out for free. There's no membership fees, and you get really great pricing, and the stuff ships right to your door. And it's really, it's one of those stores too that, like, I remember Neil telling me, he's like, well, I didn't know I needed that until I saw it.
Right.
And then, oh, yes, I need that.
Well, they've started a new thing too called reward dollars. So you earn 5% reward dollars on every purchase from Touch of Modern, and they're free and they're automatic. There's no additional sign up. So basically, the more stuff you buy, then the more you earn. So it's a really cool reward program. So if there's cool stuff on here you want to get, go for it.
So touchofmodern.com, check it out. And remember, if you see something you like, you got to get it, because in a couple days it may not be there.
Yeah, like the sustainable solar light.
Actually, a day later it may not be there.
It might not be there. Solar puff light.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so you take it out like outside for a barbecue or camping trip. How about that? God, nice. They got a lot of environmentally friendly stuff on this site. I dig it.
Right. Okay, so now let's get back to Comic-Con. We were talking about a lot of the trailers, you know, Hall H is where, you know, you see the big trailers. But now what's great now is you don't have to wait. As soon as it premieres at Hall H, it's pretty much online almost immediately.
Yeah.
But it would be cool to watch it at Hall H in front of everybody. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, except that, you know, everything you have to go through to get into Hall H, you know, there's this huge line that you have to be in.
You
had to
wait in line like a day before, right?
Yeah.
I'm so torn about the trailer thing because, like, I'm glad the first, like, I didn't watch any Force Awakens trailers until I saw it on the big screen because I wanted that experience.
Yeah.
And some of these trailers I've just watched and they look cool, but there's a part of me that's like, oh man, I wish I would have seen that on the big screen.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So let's get into it. First one is Kong Skull Island.
Now, this is the one I was also very skeptical about, and it ended up being my favorite trailer of Comic-Con. I really, really liked it. It just felt like old school filmmaking to me. It was going on like King Kong was. You know, it's like a bunch of explorers go onto an island and, like, who knows what we're going to find. And, oh, we're getting murdered by these giant monsters. And it kind of puts it in, like, modern times, because you also have some great big name people are in this too. You have John Goodman.
When he came on screen, I was like, what?
Yeah, John Goodman. And also some weird special effect. He looks younger now than he has in, like, 20 years.
He's lost all this weight and stuff. Yeah. I was like, whoa.
Loki is in it.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, the thing that's cool, and then you've got Jordan Vogt Roberts, who is the director. He's done a lot of TV, but he also did The Kings of Summer, which came out in 2013. So he's done a lot of TV, but he hasn't done a lot of, like, big budget.
Oh, so, like, this is his first one.
This is his first, like.
Oh, interesting. God, how do you jump from Kings of Summer to, you know, a giant tentpole King Kong movie?
You know, it's
his dad runs the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done funnier, like, he's done, you know, a lot of online stuff, which I don't know how he got this gig, but I think it's cool that
the trailer looks good that they
are giving a small budget director a shot at this big budget film, because I agree, the trailer does look really cool. My fear is it's produced by the people that did Godzilla.
Oh, yeah.
So, on its own accord, the trailer, you barely see King Kong. That's what the trailer should be.
Right.
But if it pulls a Godzilla, and it's a two-hour movie, and there's only 63 seconds of Godzilla.
You can't. Skull Island's got, like, dinosaurs, King Kong, giant spiders. You got to see all that stuff in there. I'll be disappointed, too, if that happens.
Because that was the biggest problem with that.
I don't see that happening.
I think they probably took the criticism of the first one. They're like, we should probably put more Kong in it, you know?
And if we're going to basically make Monster Island, we're going to have to probably show the monsters.
Yeah, and although a question I have, is this a reboot? Or what is, does this, you know, is this associated with Peter Jackson's King Kong at all?
No, no.
So this is this the first King, Kong then in a new series?
Yeah, I think
it definitely looks that way, because it's definitely put in modern times.
It's talked about it. It's an action adventure story centered on King Kong's origins. The trailer to me looks like it's a brand new origin story of Kong, and it's the coolest. Like Samuel Jackson in the trailer.
It's definitely not set in the 30s.
Oh, man. Right. Yeah. And it's like they're all in this helicopter and they got a camera crew and they're going to the island and all of a sudden, oh, somebody throws a palm tree
into the helicopter.
That was awesome.
And then Samuel Jackson has a gun on John Goodman going, tell me everything I don't know, or whatever, however that line is. And it's like,
or I'm going to blow your head off.
I'm going to blow your head off. So it's like, and John Goodman has some kind of line that's like, there's monsters out there. Yeah. You don't want to know about it or whatever. So it's like, I feel like, and then the quick scene with the close up with the crazy tribe. I'm excited.
Now, there was a guy who was like on a triceratops skull and he had a gun out. I was like, that is a awesome visual.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited too, but I do have reservations.
Yeah, right. Understandable.
I have Godzilla reservations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, then now the Justice League.
Now the Justice League movie. Okay.
All right, Juan, you go first since you had such a palpable reaction.
Okay. Well, it's just all right, so Batman is in this trailer and he's recruiting everybody. That is the furthest thing from what Batman would do,
I
think, ever. When I at the end of Batman versus Superman was like, "Hey, I think we should get a team together." I was like, "No, you're the one who's always saying I need to be alone. Right. I work better alone." No, and he's gathering everybody together and he's making jokes and quippy about it.
Yeah, he reluctantly even joins the Justice League.
Yeah, exactly, and only because he has to. Right? And we've got him going through and...
Honestly, these movies will not get any better until Zack Snyder and his wife are gone.
That's David Goyer. You know, David Goyer has famously said that he doesn't believe that someone can say the words Martian Manhunter with a straight face. Now, why would you have someone like that in charge of your franchise? There is zero love coming from them, and it shows in their movies.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
It's disappointing that, you know, DC is, you know, locked in with Snyder and Goyer. I'm hoping for the day that Geoff Johns gets to take over.
Oh, that happened. I had said that a couple months ago. And an article came out where they're putting him in charge, him and like somebody else, of like the studios that's supposed to make these movies. Now, it's a large ship to correct, for sure.
Right.
But yeah, that should have happened 10 years ago.
Without a doubt.
Chris Terrio, who wrote Argo, is the writer of this. But he also wrote Batman versus Superman. So it's hard to say.
Now, here's the thing that is interesting is you see everything, you know, all these, putting the team together, everything looks like a pale imitation of the Marvel movies. It's like we're trying to catch up to the Marvel movies and we're going about it in a haphazard, random way, and we're not being true to the characters. And also, even like the production even looked cheaper in a way. Like when you saw them walking around with their costumes and this dark lighting and stuff, that was one thing. The Marvel movies are always brighter. You can see everything. But like, and that was like, oh, we got to go darker for this. But now I can't see anything, and now what I am seeing looks cheesy and cheap.
I think the DC cinematic universe is the asylum version of the Marvel universe. You know?
I think you're right, and I think too. Like you always hear like these buzzwords from the studios and like from the press releases. Like, well, here at Warner Brothers, we're a filmmaker driven studio, and first of all, that doesn't exist.
No.
There is no filmmaker-driven studio.
Yeah.
There is a profit-driven studio, and that is it.
Yeah.
So it's always like, you know, we let the filmmakers do what they want. No, you don't. Yeah. And you're also picking the wrong ones. So, so everything about that statement is wrong. You're not fooling anyone. So I really think that it just needs a course correction. I think Geoff Johns is the person to do it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, also when you look at how good the animated ones have been out of the Warner Brothers studios. So
well they have been up until lately. Yeah.
Yeah. So, there are hidden myths for sure. But yeah, we'll get into that. So I saw this Justice League movie, and the only thing I was thinking, well, it looks a little better than Batman versus Superman. And clearly... it's like, I don't know who they're fooling saying that Superman's not going to be in it. Like, Superman's not in the trailer, but who thinks that he's not going to be in that movie?
Right, yeah. Exactly. We're talking about the Justice League here, you know?
It's like, is there anyone watching the movie when Superman shows up and goes, oh, I thought he was dead.
What a surprise.
Oh my God, I'm so surprised. Huh? This is great.
Yeah.
So let's now, staying in the DC universe, let's go to Wonder Woman. Because this trailer actually looked kind of cool to me.
It looks amazing.
And I... Patty Jenkins, who directed Monster.
Yes.
She's doing this, and this
really
makes,
picking a female director. That's weird.
Wow. Well,
I don't know.
I don't think they can direct it.
That's such an odd choice for a Wonder Woman movie.
And so that gives me like, it feels like it's in a very capable director's hands.
Yes. And I love that trailer, by the way. I thought as all the DC live action movies, I was the most excited about that one.
Yeah.
And but, I think too, it's like, that was the trailer where I went, oh, actually maybe Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman. Because I haven't bought it up until now.
Right. Yeah.
Because you haven't really seen her as Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Yet. Yeah. I mean, she's just like, you know, like you have this vision
You've
of.
You've seen her wear a costume and walk around a party.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And hold a shield, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when you think of Wonder Woman, I think of a taller, more muscular woman.
Sure.
You know, someone who's taller than both Superman and Batman.
Who maybe came from a planet of Amazons.
Maybe. You know,
I mean, a planet.
Yeah,
an island. I was thinking of when you said planet before.
but one of the things I absolutely loved in that trailer was that first moment of the lasso.
Yes,
I was like, yes, because it was glowing. It was gold. It was cool. It was amazing.
It's also one of the writers is Jeff Johns, who wrote the Flash TV series. He wrote the Batman Arkham Knight video game. He wrote Arrow.
Yeah, and he's going to be in charge of the studio now.
Yeah, he gets this.
He loves this. Yeah, he loves it.
He loves it. He's excited to do this, and I think
smartest thing Warner Brothers and DC ever did was hire him as an executive.
Yeah.
Now let him do his job.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that meant that he does less and less comic books.
Right.
You know, and you know, we all know how the DC universe is happening, but you know, it's. I believe he will definitely be the one who will be able to write the ship. Fortunately, it will be, you know, this movie's already done, so he had nothing to do with it. I'm sure Flash and stuff like that, that's already, you know, kind of out of his hands. But once he's able to then start a movie fresh.
Right.
You know, because like Ghost Rider is technically the first Marvel movie, but they had nothing to do with it. They just released it at the end. And then Iron Man was their first movie. So it's just like that, you know, we're going to get shitty movies under Geoff Johns' name because they were already in the pipeline.
Right.
But once he's able to take over from the very beginning, then we're going to start seeing some amazing things coming out of that studio.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't even know if I want to see Justice League, but Wonder Woman I want to see.
Yeah, I want to see Wonder Woman. And I want to see Suicide Squad. We saw a new trailer for Suicide Squad. I'm excited about this movie, too. I hope we're not duped. I'm hoping it looks good. But, you know, even if you look at all these DC movies as a whole, it's like, it's still the wrong direction. We're trying to play catch-up with Marvel. Well, no, you don't have to play catch-up with
Marvel. That's the thing.
Do your own thing.
That's what I feel like Wonder Woman. I feel like this is its own thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. These writers and this director went, let's make our own cool Wonder Woman movie.
Right. Yeah. And set it in World War I, right? Yeah. Which is interesting,
And you know, let's say that when Joss Whedon was going to do Wonder Woman, he was going to set it in World War I, and Warner Brothers was like, no, nobody wants to see a superhero set in World War II. Like, that's stupid. Yeah. Meanwhile, Captain America had just come out.
Exactly.
So, you know, and now they're like, you know, they kick him off the project, and then they're like, oh, well, maybe we should put it in World War II.
Yeah. I think I'm excited. I'm excited for this film. All right.
Yeah, me too. Next one, Doctor Strange. Finally got a full trailer for Doctor Strange.
Oh, that looks so good.
It does look good.
So good.
Yeah. And you just see the difference between like what Marvel's doing and what DC is doing. Now I'm more excited about this.
First of all, because now Marvel has proven themselves, there's this like brand recognition where you go, oh, well, it's Marvel. So they won't fuck it up.
Master of the Mystic Arts. Sure, I'm down.
At some point they'll ruin it, but not yet. You know, I even rewatched like the Hulk and some of the ones. Like we started. I'll tell you, it's a great thing to do. If you get the Blu-rays, just watch them in order from start to finish. Start with Iron Man, and you know, go through them. Like Hulk, I remember Jackie Cation telling me this again. You know, it's not as bad as you think it is. I watched it again. You know what? If you watch it in order, almost like you're watching like a mini series of all these movies, it's not as horrible. Mm-hmm. As you think, and then it's still not great, don't get me wrong. But it's not as bad as I remember seeing it in the movie theater. So I really love the way everything's interconnected, and I'd like to see how Doctor Strange is going to fit in with the larger Marvel universe.
Because
I love what they're also doing on Netflix. It's like these darker, grittier heroes are on Netflix. They're all going to come together in the Defender series. But it's still the same universe. It's not like, well, we have one Daredevil on Netflix and one Daredevil in the
right.
movies. Like this dumb thing DC is doing. Now right. we've got a TV Flash and a movie Flash.
Yeah. An insanely popular TV Flash.
I know. It's like these guys are amazing. Like yeah. these shows, like Supergirl, they're all yeah. good and they're all well put together. Arrow and Flash. Why not have them in the movies?
Yeah. And the reason those shows are so good is because the people who work on them, Mark Guggenheim, Greg yes. Berlanti, yeah. they love comic books.
And they're comic book writers.
Comic book writers.
They came
they're creators.
Up writing. Yeah.
They came up reading, loving this stuff, yeah. and they're giving us what we
I don't
want.
Know how Mark has the time to do everything. I mean, he's even working on like a Rocketeer
right.
comic series.
What?
He's doing all these comic like limited series. It's like, oh my God, I know you have two kids too, but
he loves it, right? Yeah, when you love it?
You're working on multiple shows, and he's like, he says he literally has no time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, he goes from one show to the other. But that's the thing. You get actual comic book creators working on these things who have a love of the material.
Yeah.
And that's true for any film.
Film.
Yeah, get someone who has a love for the material. Sam Raimi loved Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the first two Spider-Mans were fantastic.
And the second one is a near masterpiece.
Yeah, yeah, it was really good. So the next one is Blair Witch. Now, I will give everyone a preview. When we were did the Comic-Con episode in the hotel room after midnight with Rick and... Eric was talking about this movie, The Woods, and he was like, yeah, it's kind of a Blair Witch movie. Sure enough, the day later at Comic-Con, they renamed it Blair Witch.
Really?
That's the one he was talking about. Wow. He's like, that he was excited to see. So Blair Witch, I saw the trailer for this. It's a weird thing. It looks kind of like one of those Mad Max kind of remakes, where it's kind of a sequel, kind of a remake. Well, we're not really starting from the beginning, but we're starting kind of... We're going to have a lot of the same set pieces.
Okay.
So I'm not exactly sure from the trailer if this is like, no, this is a sequel. No, this is a remake. Yeah. It's in that weird middle ground.
I guess we'll find out when we get the character names, whether yes. it's those. If it's the right. same character names, then yes, it's a right. remake. If it's yeah. not, then it's yeah. a continuation. If
someone like they went and they're like, well, my sister went missing now, or now I'm going to go find, or it's like a sibling or sister or brother. Now I'm going to go find them. And then, you know, then the Blair Witch.
It's Adam Wingard, the same director of The Guest, which was a really cool movie that we all like.
He's a great horror mm-hmm. director.
So that could be cool. My one complaint with the original Blair Witch was, I mean, it was a phenomenon. That was the first found footage
right,
thing
exactly.
was great, but it was like you never saw the witch. The thing I've said right. a million times, it was like if you went to a Jaws movie and you saw the fin and they heard the music, dun 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 dun, and then the shark never jumped out of the water.
Right.
You never saw it. Yeah. You just saw the fan and the music.
Well, I mean, if you remember when Blair Witch came out, it was this huge yeah. phenomenon. When it hit the theaters, everyone went to see it, but a lot of people hated it.
Right.
It was one of those movies where, like, oh, yeah. I want to see what all the fuss is about. I'm like, ah, I couldn't see anything. I hated this movie.
Yeah.
And that's why the sequel died. So, right. like, you know, yeah. it bankrupted Artisan.
They
put all this movie into the sequel, but so many people saw the first one but didn't like it.
Yeah.
No one went to see the sequel.
Yeah, so. And then they also took lost a lot of the money that they stole from the original filmmakers.
Yeah.
Oh, a lot of stuff happened.
Boy, that was like, boy, they don't know how to manage money at all.
Yeah.
They're horrible.
Even
they're not
stolen
even...
money they can't handle.
Yeah.
So I will say that the trailer, I am intrigued. I'm hoping it's not a complete remake. I hope it does some interesting things. Right. And so we will see.
Although, I mean, it's difficult to catch. I mean, it was such a lightning in a bottle at the time.
It's really tough. You have to do something different with it. So,
yeah.
And the trailer I'm seeing, there wasn't really anything crazy different. It does look scary and mm-hmm. interesting, but I'm hoping they're holding some stuff back. Like, no, this is really what's going to happen, which would be really cool. So, okay, I ran into Steele Saunders at Comic-Con.
Hey, nice.
I was literally walking across the street, and I hear Chris, and Steele, you know, he's got his Zoom. So there will be an episode that I'm on of the Steele Wars podcast coming up, us talking and at a corner, walking through the streets of Comic-Con. Myself and my children are on the episode, and we all get attacked by a June bug, and we hear us all yell.
Now, is this your kid's first appearance on a podcast?
It is not.
Oh, okay.
My daughter shows up here for spoiler eps every once in a while. I think it's my son's first.
Griff's never been on the show.
No. So it was definitely his first one. And I said, are these the first kids on the podcast? And he's like, no, I've had kids on before. Are these the first American kids on your podcast? He said, yes.
Ah, well, there you go.
That's the coolest part about Comic-Con. I ran into...
Isn't it great? You just run into
200,000 people down there.
Yeah.
And like, I saw a buddy of mine... John Schrader, and it's easy to run into him because he's almost 7 feet tall, but I was like, Johnny, what's up? So I saw him, and then I ran into...
And he was in costume,
He was
right?
in costume.
Was he a Swamp Thing?
Yeah. No, he was Groot. Yeah. who listens to the show? Gigi, who listens to the show, I ran into her. So that was really cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
that's... And some fans came to the panel, which was really cool.
Yeah.
So it was really fun. And that's one of the reasons that we haven't been on the Comics on Comics panel is because it happens the same time as the Kung Fu Movie Extravaganza every year.
I mean, I guess what I'm going to have to do is find whoever's doing your podcast and then kill him, take his power, you know, and then you guys can come back on my show.
So now one of the things we talked about last week that I actually looked up was
The
New Birth of a Nation movie. And I was wondering why they had the filmmaker had chosen that title. There had to be a specific reason. And turns out, thanks to the internet, there was. Okay. And this is the answer. I want to actually read his statement because I think it's important. The 2016 film uses the same title as the title of D.W. Griffith's 1915 KKK propaganda film in a very purposeful way, Nate Parker told The Hollywood Reporter. He said his film had the same title, ironically, but very much by design. And he told Filmmaker magazine, Griffith's film relied heavily on racist propaganda to evoke fear and desperation as a tool to solidify white supremacy as the lifeblood of American sustenance. Not only did this film motivate the massive resurgence of the terror group the Ku Klux Klan and the carnage exacted against people of African descent, it served as the foundation of the film industry we know today. I've reclaimed this title and repurposed it as a tool to challenge racism and white supremacy in America, to inspire a riotous disposition toward any and all injustice in this country and abroad, and to promote the kind of honest confrontation that will galvanize our society toward healing and sustain systemic change.
Now that is a filmmaker with a purpose.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm talking about. That
couldn't be more specific of a reason to use the title.
And honestly, in this, what's happening in America right now, that we need to have this honest discussion. Yes. There's a book out and by a guy that plays tight end for the Baltimore Ravens, and I forget the guy's name. But I saw him on the NFL Network, and he's a black guy, and he goes, we keep talking about the racism and division in this country is that group. We need to fix them, or they need to. And he goes, we need to look at ourselves. He goes, everybody needs to look in the mirror and ask themselves, where am I racist? Everybody. And then we can start having a discussion. And it's like, I think it's great. I think it's great this filmmaker's doing this. Yes. I think it's great that that's his statement, and that's the reason why.
And this was independently financed. He raised the money on his own.
Oh, a studio didn't give him money for this?
I could have sworn a focus group would have said, 10, all the way across. That is weird.
How many zeros do you want?
Huh. Well, no, I mean, absolutely.
Oh, wait, Sundance? Now we want to buy it.
Oh, yeah.
You
know, I think that the more we bring this into the light, you know, I believe there's a Latin saying, you know, let the truth come out, even though the heavens may fall.
Right.
Right. And, sunlight is the best disinfectant. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we have to stop hiding this. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to just admit the fact, yes, you know, we're all kind of racist on one level or another. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe only humans should run for Miss America, right? Or Miss Universe, right? Mm-hmm. Fuck all the other animals. I'm, you know, But you know, the more we get this out, the more we can have the sunlight cleanse it. You know, people are because of social media, people are finding out that other people are super racist. That, you know, like all the stuff that happened with Leslie Jones. You know, that was horrible.
It's funny. It's because it's what you're talking about. The light is an interesting way. I was having this conversation with a friend about, is there more police brutality today than there was? I don't know. I don't think so. I just think everyone's got a camera now.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like what LBJ, those recordings of LBJ came out in the 60s, and he was like, we need to get cops with fire hoses and German shepherds on TV so the rest of America can see the racism that's happening in the South.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what needs to happen, is you need to see all of America – from wherever you're from, needs to see that there's a lot of racism in on all sides, and needs to see. And I think the internet is, you're seeing that, like, oh, people aren't that bad to celebrities. Oh, no, no, yeah, yeah, they are, yeah. Especially women ones. Oh, and a black woman got even more shit?
Yeah.
Right. Like, the cops aren't that, you know, trigger happy. Yeah, they're shooting unarmed, because before...
Yeah.
And again, I'm not saying, oh, all cops are bad, but like that guy that was the caretaker lying on the ground, he's on the ground with his hands in the air, and the cop shoots him in the leg, and he goes, why did you shoot me? The cop goes, I don't know. If there wasn't a camera on that, or the guy that was the girlfriend that had the camera on the boyfriend in Baton Rouge, that's gut-wrenching, that's heartbreaking, and she... Set, the cop's like, why did he reach for his wallet? And she says, you asked him to.
Yeah.
You said, why not? That's on camera. If that wasn't on camera, it would have been his word against hers.
And it would have been justifiable. So and...
Hey, he had a gun.
Yeah.
He had a gun on him.
Oh, no, no. I thought he had a gun. He said he had a gun.
He said he had a gun. He went for his pocket. I had to.
Yeah.
So now I think we got to have this conversation. You know what I mean? And then also...
Bleeds into the gun issue, too. If police never know who has a gun, or if everyone has guns, or there's all these open carry laws, they're more terrified of getting shot.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that goes, you know, the NRA is like...
Well, everyone should have a gun.
If everyone had a gun, we'd be safer. Well, that... There's 300 million...
What about all those policemen that just got executed? They were armed. Why didn't they protect everyone?
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, you want to... Like, there's a lot of issues we need to talk about. So in Dallas and Baton Rouge, you had two, one was an Army vet, one was a Marine vet, trained by our military, probably having PTSD.
Right.
And that's why the Baton Rouge shooting, the guy had 8 minutes. He wasn't just some wingnut who started shooting and the cops took him out. He was trained, man. You see him stepping up behind the...
And what if he didn't have a high-powered rifle? What if he could only get a handgun?
What if he couldn't get any gun?
What if you're going to get any gun? Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it's like, so everyone, everyone needs to have this conversation, because you're starting to see, I mean, Christ, after the mass killing in Orlando, Bill O'Reilly said, maybe we need to reevaluate gun laws.
Now, I will give him credit. He's always been for gun control. It's like one of those things that you never see talked about on Fox News. He's for gun control.
It's like... And we got to talk about it. You know, the Marine in Baton Rouge apparently was like either a part of some sort of like black separatist organization. And he was like, I'm going to go kill cops and white cops. And of course, one of the cops he killed was this black dude who was like, had these posts on Facebook about, hey, we got to come together.
Right.
And you're just seeing how racism and hatred and violence by anybody is awful.
Guns, mental illness, it all, it went into like this giant toxic pool, and now it's erupting.
Yep.
So, and it's good to see movies like this to kind of shine a light on everything.
We got
it. You know,
it's what an artist should do.
Yeah, right. shine light into the darkness, you know, and disinfect.
Yeah.
There's one thing, like my uncle from Mexico is staying with me for the summer.
You're Mexican?
Build a wall.
What? Juan Manuel, what? I know. He came.
I am shocked.
He jumped over, you know, he was bringing some strawberries. he was watching the news, and in the southern part of Mexico there were all of these protests happening, and he saw that the police had stopped a bus and they were beating on the bus, right? These are police officers in uniform in full riot gear attacking this bus full of people. And my uncle was like, I didn't get a chance. You don't see this in Mexico. Like, you know, we just hear that some of this stuff is going on, but here's an actual video. And here's the thing. This was like a live video or a video that has just been posted on YouTube. So 5 minutes after it happened, he was like, oh my God, I can see what is going on right now. And in Mexico, that's not on the news. So because we have cameras everywhere, you know, and the whole world can see, we can go live streaming and the whole world can see something.
Yeah.
Right.
So that is a good thing.
That's where YouTube can actually be really useful.
Yes.
Twitter, not sure how still.
Yeah. Well, you can tweet out a link to to YouTube.
Right.
You know.
But I mean, but we're even seeing like in the Ukraine, in the, what was the Arab Spring?
Mm-hmm.
Like social media was like bringing down governments. I mean, so part of it is we all need, because I think a lot of people, if you have a nice middle class life in America or in any industrialized country, you might be, it might be easy for you to go, come on, that's not
right.
You know what I mean? And I'm not saying those people are all dumb, out of touch, racist. I'm saying anybody could sit there and go, come on, anybody of any ethnicity. If you were born middle class in America, you want, it's a winning lottery ticket.
Yeah.
I mean, literally by comparison to the rest of the world. And that's, and I think America
for now.
Right. Yeah. But that's the thing. Like people are, I think Americans are pretty out of touch on all levels.
Yeah.
We have no idea. Like the people on any who like, you know, these militia white supremacist groups or even this black separatist group, that's like civil war. I'm like, do you really know what a civil war looks like?
Yeah.
Do you want this? Do you people think like, yeah, we got to fight. Do you really? Do you want
to
not
quote? We got always got those who don't know history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
You know, and how much of us to really know?
Does anyone in this country, aside from someone that was a soldier stationed somewhere or from a third world country, how many of us know what it's like to like, because here's what a civil war brings. There's no running water. There's intermittent electricity.
Right.
Friends and family members
There's no Wi-Fi?
Yeah, there's no Wi-Fi. There's no trips to Costco.
But I can still have pizza delivered though, right?
Oh, yeah. Pizza's still delivered.
Okay, well then.
But it's delivered by the Rebel Army. Live.
Oh,
yeah.
Well.
Yeah, who might kill and rape your friends and family. Yeah. And it's like, people don't understand. Anyway, we could talk about this forever, but hats off to this filmmaker.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. So what we're saying is, be nice to each other.
Yeah,
love and peace.
Be nice to each other.
Exactly. Don't be a dick.
Don't be assholes.
Don't be a tick. It's not hard.
So anyway, coming up on DVD Blu-ray, The Boss. This is the Melissa McCarthy movie. Mm-hmm. Anybody see it?
I did not see it.
I didn't see it either.
Nope.
All right. Fair enough. I don't think a lot of people saw it. It didn't do very well.
Yeah, Spy did well, but The Boss, I don't think The Boss did.
The Barbershop 3, The Next Cut.
Now, I saw this on a plane, and I liked the first Barbershop movie a lot. I thought it was really funny. This movie has some of the same humor in it, but it's more... It starts out again. It starts out very much social commentary. The filmmakers are from Chicago, and Chicago the last couple of years on the South and West Side particularly has really awful gun violence.
Mm. Was Ice Cube still involved in these?
Yeah, movies? He's still in it. So it really is about that. It's about the gun violence in this neighborhood and gang violence and how can we bring people together. And, you know, in the second one, they merged with a woman's beauty salon. So there's a lot, there's the men and the women and everyone's sort of talking about and joking about issues. For a comedy, it's trying to talk about some stuff, and I'll give these filmmakers credit, you know, and they felt like there hadn't been one of these movies in a while. And they felt sort of compelled because Chicago has gotten really, violent. So it's worth seeing.
There've been like, you know, 4 or 5 movies, because they also like Beauty Shop is a part of that, you know, universe, and I believe there's a TV show and stuff like that. So I mean that's crazy that here's this long brand.
Are we gonna have a side story from the Barbershop universe?
Probably. Yeah, you know, a little stingers at the end. Yeah. You know, introduce characters from others.
And Criminal is the Kevin Costner movie that no one saw.
I didn't.
Yeah, and Hardcore Henry is a movie that people have told me is good, but I can't see it just because of the motion sickness issue. I couldn't even watch the trailer. Yeah, I started getting dizzy just from watching the trailer. Now, I've played first-person shooter games, but this one just went so fast and so quick. It was, I don't know, maybe I could watch it in 60-second bursts, but that would take forever. So Hardcore Henry, if you like first person shooters and you can handle the vertigo, check it out. I have heard good. Chris Gore loved it. He thought it was fantastic. So Sing Street, this is
John Carney's film.
It's kind of like a music breakfast club, like in Ireland, something like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is the guy that did Begin Again and Once. So it's sort of like takes place in the 80s in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
Looks interesting. I didn't get a chance to see it.
I saw the trailer. I liked it, it had a real nostalgic kind of feel to it, that 80s feel. I Am Wrath. This trailer made me laugh out loud. This was John Travolta saying, "I want a Taken." And it's so ridiculous.
Everyone wants a Taken now.
Yeah, everyone wants a Taken. And this is John Travolta's. I can't imagine the investors are happy with the performance of this film. I can't imagine people got their money back on this one. I remember seeing it like on demand like a while back, and now it's, you know, finally coming to DVD and Blu-ray.
Good to see Rebecca De Mornay's working.
But you gotta watch the trailer. It's so funny. It almost looks like a Saturday Night Live sketch. of like,
oh,
you
a parody
know,
of a parody of
like Dick, yeah, like those movies.
So what got took?
What brings his wrath?
Yeah, because he is wrath. Oh, yeah. I am wrath.
I have a certain set of wrath skills.
So. That was my parking spot. I'm so wrathful now.
It will entertain you. So the site spotlight, the fan feedback, another dose of weekly film news. And then, Graham, you want to talk about the Facebook feedback?
All right. So this is a Facebook feedback from Roman Harrington. And he goes, finally got around to listening to this week's episode, traveling much of last week. And that was last week's episode 330 he's referring to. One point of order.
By the way, well, nicely done. Always start with point of order.
Mm-hmm. Point of order? He's respectfully
pointing out
very and having polite. A disagreement, which is what this world needs. Mm-hmm. Everybody said point of order.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would we have all the fighting in this world?
No, we
probably
wouldn't.
Not.
Point of order, sir. Robert Putnam's work, and he's talking about the book I referenced called Bowling Alone, focused on the decline of social capital, not diversity. His thesis was that we, as Americans, are less connected with one another because we're not members of social and civic clubs in the same numbers as historically. Hence, we are bowling alone because we're not members of bowling leagues. LOL, if this is my only, quote, complaint, close quote, then the show is good. Keep up the good work. First of all, fuck off. Right? That bullshit. No, this was awesome. And I read this morning and was like so glad because it's been a while since I've read that book, Bowling Alone. And I really appreciate the clarification. And I love that, you know, we're not MSNBC or Fox. We don't have to have a pro again. That's part of the media's part of the problem,
right,
too.
It's right. Just,
everything's got to be a fight. Everything's got to be an us versus them. Yeah. And I love that we're on a show that someone can call us and say, or email us and say, you were a little off. And he's correct. It is true.
Here for the opposing point of view on MSNBC is some guy we found in an alley.
Yeah. Who's crazy.
Yeah.
And we will now scream for 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yes. And we're going to let their point of view sound as though it's an even footing.
He lives in a box.
Yeah.
The world is flat. People shouldn't get an even voice. I don't care what they fucking think. Let's have a discussion between reasonable people. Because here's another thing you'll never hear on traditional media. Oh, good point. Maybe I was wrong.
I didn't think of that.
So yeah, I guess I it's been a while since I read the book and I was sort of mixing his message into one of diversity, but it is true. It's what that book is about is how we need. So I would make this contention. Is that if we all started, and the contention of the book is we don't, if we all started to join more social clubs, we would then.
We would be more social,
but part of the problem is there's very much this we're closed off. We've become so tribal that it's like you're different. So you're just over there and you're not a person. You're just someone with a completely different point of view and I don't want to deal with you. Whereas if we're in a social group, you know, like this is a great example. We're all nerds.
Yeah.
We all love the same things. We all loved Comic-Con and we joked about it, but you being Mexican and us being Italian and Irish is like way down the list.
Right, exactly.
It's not, you're not the Mexican guest.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you are. Right.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, because we are
that's not how we put you on the schedule.
I know. Thank you for the jalapenos, by the way. That was really, you know. I know, you give it to everybody, guests. Yeah.
Do you need another Corona?
Yeah.
Would you like another?
Si, señor.
So why do you like Speedy Gonzalez?
Yeah. He's so fast. He's so good.
But you know what I mean? Like that's an example of what the book is trying to say. And the point I was trying to make last week, and I incorrectly made, and thank you, Roman, for correcting me. But that goes to the larger issue is if everybody does sort of is willing to belong. Like I say this to friends of mine, you know, when I traveled all the war zones, friends of mine that are seriously very liberal.
Hmm.
And I was like, do you know anybody in the military? Do you know anybody that's a conservative? Are you willing?
Right.
Are you willing to talk to them and hear their point of view? Because that was the thing about me going over there. I'm this, you know, crazy liberal from California or whatever, and talking to people in the military who come from a different background made me go, I see your point of view. Mm-hmm. I see your point of view. And I think that's what we need a little more. It's also okay to say, hey, let's just agree to disagree. You know, and that's like Chris and I, we've tried to do that on this show. We don't get into fights with guests when they say things like, you know,
Han shot second. Yeah. Right? I mean, that's fine. I'm glad that you guys accept my point of view on that. And that you're not going to challenge me at all about it. But
some people are crazy and wrong. Yeah, right. And that's okay. We accept the differences.
Right, exactly. I know. And I'm glad that you can accept that in yourself. You know, but one of the things is oh, damn it. I just lost the train of thought. That's why we'll just go on. I'm sure it'll pop back.
But no, we appreciate that fan feedback, Roman, and that's the thing. And this is something I would say. We've talked about it on the show. The reason we have this point of Chris and I have worked very hard to cultivate a community where we can do that.
Yes. Right.
And we've gotten some emails. We got one after the Oscars that really made me mad. The email was a little reactionary. And we've gotten some emails like that where
you communicated with the person.
I did communicate with the person and I said, stop listening to the show. Your email's infuriating. And I'll give this person credit. They said, I'm not going to stop listening to the show because I think it's awesome. And I'm sorry you feel that way. I didn't mean to offend you. And I was like,
wow. So she took the high road.
She took the high road. Okay. Me, not so much. No.
Still banned.
But you can admit that.
But I can admit. Yes. I can admit. I didn't. I was too pissed off. Uh-huh. Because it was.
Well, we're all human. You know, we're all human. We're going to have emotional reactions sometimes.
And certain things are going to be super personal. Mm-hmm. Like this issue was brought up. It was super personal because I was like, you don't know what
and
I
the
went,
other thing
what I went through growing
too,
up. You don't know what I went through. So don't comment on it.
Sometimes that happens too, and we don't understand when we have those discussions with people that like you're saying something that you don't understand that the other person is taking it super personal because you're not meaning it to be
right,
personal.
Right,
but
right.
The other person may take it super personal, but you have to be aware of that. That's maybe how they're reacting.
And I love that we have created this community where people can write these things. And
we can have those reactions and then get past them.
Right. Move on and go.
And learn and grow from them.
And learn and grow from them. And said, maybe I should have read the book better.
Yeah.
Well, no, you know, I should have thumbed through it like such an asshole.
Yeah, Graham, you don't read good.
Yeah. Well, if there was a Cliff Notes version, I'm sure
you'd read not so good.
Yeah. No, but I think that while civic groups are kind of cool, right, it's not something that we join anymore, but we have been able to replace them. You know, we have Facebook, right? We have social media. These are groups that we are joining. Mm-hmm. Perhaps one of the more diverse groups that I'm in is like I play Magic, right? The card game. Mm-hmm. I play Magic.
Nerd.
Oh my goodness. You know, and I'm play with a team, right? Mm-hmm. And looking at the roster, it is the most diverse list of names you'll see. We've got everybody, and you know, from all over in LA. On this team. You know, we had like 20 people on the team and probably no two or three people.
Do you have a bus?
Huh? We don't. Well, the Metro, my mom also takes me there.
Use your tap card.
You know, and I think that is great when, you know, when we would all be sitting there and we're all different. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the best thing. But whenever I'm in a room and I'm the exact same race as every single one person in there, then it's kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in LA. In the high school I went to, they spoke over 160 languages on campus.
Right.
Wow.
You know, there were, in my graduating class, there were like 2,000 people or something. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there were, I'm used to always interacting with other races. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was on a film set once in Fresno. And I was talking to people who had only gone to school with other white people. And they told me the story about the one Mexican kid who was in class, right? And he had graduated in 2010. So I'm just like, how is this a reality for some people?
That is the reality for a lot of people. I learned that because my high school was very diverse. And it was like 40% minority.
I grew up in the suburbs. It was mostly white.
Mostly white, right, exactly.
The suburbs in Pennsylvania.
And the thing I learned, because like I was in the 80s, and we were listening to rap music and all that kind of stuff before it became popular. And you know, I was on the football team, which was very diverse.
Yeah.
And And then when I graduated and went to college, University of Arizona was primarily white, a little bit Latin, and it was like 3% black. Mm-hmm. Literally like the football and the basketball team, and you know what I mean? And a couple other people. And anytime I came in contact with someone that grew up in an all fill in the blank, mm-hmm. their view of other groups was usually a little off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I've had that like, oh, you're a white guy, so you must just be
right.
Like I belong to a country club.
Right.
Everyone's white. I had a silver spoon and whatever their vision of. And then I remember too in college, there was this big apartment party. There was the big apartment complex where there's a million parties, right? So you just pop in from party to party. And I was walking with some guys that I met in the dorm. We were freshmen, and they all came from all white towns, right?
Hmm.
And we're walking by this party, and I heard all this like house music, this rap music coming out of there. I'm like, oh shit, we got to go to that party. That's what I listened to growing up in junior high and high school. All the DJs I learned, I dance it. I can't dance to like AC/DC, and when white people dance to that shit, I'm like, I don't know what that is. And I was like, oh, we got to go to that party. And these guys were all like, oh, I'm not going in there. It's all blacks. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And it was like the weirdest thing. And then the black dudes were like, who the fuck are you? And I was like, oh, God damn it. Like, this sucks. Like, yeah. I felt like so caught in the middle of, and I think that's a lot of America. I think we're very blessed here.
You were about to get beat up by either side.
Either side.
Yeah, both sides, really.
Yeah. Fuck you, white boy. Get out of here, race traitor. Like, that was awesome. Yeah. But like, I think we're lucky and in Los Angeles, especially in show business, because show business is everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, my acting class when I first moved here, I've done comedy. I've met a million comics of a million different backgrounds. And I think we sort of, which is great and opens our view of the world, but also sometimes it can make us a little naive to the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Having traveled around and done shows in real small towns and seen like, mm-hmm. none of this racism surprises me, having traveled this country for the last 25 years. None of it. None of it. This isn't like, where'd this come from? Obama? No, this has been here. I've seen the Klan out there. I've seen the Confederate flags. I've seen that shit, man. I've seen all the bumper stickers.
I'll tell you, did you see the First Lady speech last night? There were some really moving parts in it. One of them was that she was saying, and she was really getting choked up. And we have made a lot of progress, too, despite
that's true. We have. We need to acknowledge the progress.
Absolutely.
She said, you know, the White House, it was built by slaves, and now I can watch my daughters play on the lawn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was one of the greatest moments in the speech.
Yeah.
So we've definitely made progress. We got a long way to go, but we have made progress.
Now, Ms. Trump said this, right?
Yeah.
Ms. Trump? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that was great.
Well, no, she's going to say that next week if she takes Michelle's speech again.
So, all right, premiering this week, we've got Bad Moms. Now, I watched the trailer for this. I'm very unimpressed with this movie. And it's one of those things, too, like, this kind of, I get what the target is. It's like, you know, mom's fed up with, like, you know, gluten-free, I can't bring things to the bake sale, all these rules for my kids. But this space has been covered for years by some very, very capable, funny women already. As Stephanie Wilder Taylor has been doing it for years, and there's plenty of blogs and really funny stuff out there. I feel like this is like too little, too late, and well, we've already kind of covered this ground.
Well, don't you think, though, that the things you just mentioned, the other people that have been covering it, and Stephanie, who's been on the show and I think is hilarious, it's never been a feature film. That's what struck me is...
That's true.
I felt the same way, like, I know stand-up comics have done this, but never this specific medium. The first part of the movie, I was like, oh, God, is this another, like, parenting's hard?
Right.
And then I was like, oh, the second half of it, I feel like I'm kind of excited for it because... I don't know of a movie specifically that has covered this subject matter.
Well, that's a good point. So,
well, you know,
we'll see. Maybe it'll be funny.
Yeah.
When I saw the poster for it, the first thing that struck me was, oh, all of these actresses used to be the female lead when they were younger.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and now they're, it's not like they can get, you know, they're now beginning to age out.
Yes.
So now they're all the moms.
Yeah. And by the way, they're still gorgeous moms.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Really hot moms.
Yeah.
They're all MILFs.
Yeah. This is still a TV, a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
It's not, but to me, and that's a good point. I thought that was interesting. I was like, oh, wow. Because I know that this happens to, well, to anyone, male or female, right, that becomes a parent. But especially, I've heard a lot of moms talk about this, like, you know, I was 25 and partying, and then I have a kid, and, you know, even though they work out or whatever, it's not,
I can never get sleep. It's,
you know. Right. I think that we're not the young, hip, cool, sexy anymore now that we're adults and we have children. I think from what I saw from the trailer, this take on that, now that subject matter has been covered a fair amount, mm-hmm, but this take on it seems like it might be interesting to me. Just the scene where Mila Kunis has this grandma bra on and her friend goes, "Oh my God." She goes, "No, this is my sexy bra." "That's your sexy," like, yeah, that was funny. You know,
it's like you have a unibra.
Yeah. That was funny to me. So I'm curious to see how this is, because a lot of those women actually do have kids in real life.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And they're having to, yeah, they're shit hot moms. Yeah. They're Hollywood actresses with personal trainers and nutritionists.
Yeah.
But still, they're having to battle that in Hollywood.
Right.
Because they're not getting hired to do the bikini scene in the movie.
All right. You've made me moderately more interested in seeing it. So Jason Bourne. Now, I guess, what did one of our guests say? Yeah, the last one was so good that the original people decided to come back.
Yeah. They're like, "Oh, wait, you're making money still?"
Yeah.
Fine.
So
I was excited when I saw this trailer.
You know what? I have to say, this one, as long as they don't do that dumb, don't show me the action, up close action, I'm on board.
Too much handheld?
Yeah, too much handheld. If you're going to show me the action and him run around, like, I love that scene where he just punches that guy in one shot. Like, I know we talk about it more at the Comic-Con episode coming up, but that's I'm excited too. I think this is like kind of a good, yeah, I'm ready for another installment of this franchise with Matt Damon. Yeah, I'm good to go.
And I feel like, you know, Matt Damon doesn't have a history of just doing money grabs.
No, he doesn't.
So I feel like for him
if he wanted to do it, there's got to be something there that interested.
There had to be a really cool script.
Right.
That's what I have faith in.
The next movie is Gleason. This is actually a documentary. I believe it was an NFL player that was diagnosed with ALS, if I'm remembering this correctly.
So, at the age of 34, Steve Gleason was diagnosed with ALS. Doctors.
And what is ALS?
That's Lou Gehrig's disease.
Ah, okay.
I'm sure Roman will send me a correction. Doctors gave the former NFL defensive back and New Orleans hero 2 to 5 years to live. So that is what Steve chose to do, live. So it's really about his life. It's a documentary about his life.
That's one of the things we say too, is like with the show, we don't have fact checkers. We run everything on a shoestring. We do the best we can. But we do. We have thousands of them listening. We have a whole team
around the globe.
Around the clock. So they are there. This documentary looks interesting.
Yeah, I mean it's the thing that we say about a documentary when it finds an interesting story and it's a human story, mm-hmm, and you see it. You know, what makes a good documentary so compelling is an actual human, it's actually happening, kind of unfolding in front of you as you're watching it, and it's like, holy shit.
Right.
And what that would be like. Mm-hmm. So, it looks interesting to me. Looks like a cool doc. All right.
Okay, and the last movie. Now, I didn't know this was getting a theatrical release, but Juan, you had said it is. It must be getting a limited release.
Yeah, it got a limited release. The Killing Joke is the latest DC animated film, and it is released in theaters yesterday and today. So if you were a time traveler after you hear this, you would have been able to go back. And tonight, there's like two screenings, two showings, 7 and 10 o'clock, of The Killing Joke. And The Killing Joke is this iconic
Alan Moore graphic novel.
Alan Moore graphic novel, and it was originally going to be completely set outside of continuity, but it became so popular that, of course, it bled into the DC universe proper. And now Warner Brothers, of course, is going to milk every single best-selling graphic novel they have, and they'll just run it into the ground. So they have now released, they've created this animated film.
Which is, by the way, the first one that's rated R.
The first rated R film, yes. Mm-hmm. Because of the subject matter of what happens in the story.
Yes, it's brutal.
It is absolutely brutal. Basically, it's the Joker trying to prove that everybody is one day away, one shitty, shitty day from having, from turning into him.
Right.
You know? And, you know, so he goes through this. Bruce Timm, you know, the guy who created the yes. Animated Batman, the animated mm-hmm. series, Batman Beyond, he's the one who wrote and directed this.
Actually, it's directed by Sam Liu.
Oh, Sam Liu, he just wrote it?
Yeah.
Okay. So this story that is very iconic is too small, so they're like, oh, well, we need to add
it's
something.
It's not a huge graphic novel.
Yeah, it's a quick story. So they felt they needed to pad it out to make a, 76-minute release.
Right.
And unfortunately, Bruce Timm decided to add a relationship between...
Yeah, Bruce... So just according to IMDb, Bruce Timm is listed as an executive producer, but he doesn't get a writing credit.
He doesn't get a writing... Okay. Well,
But he obviously influenced some stuff.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So there was an interview with him, and he has said that, you know, in The Killing Joke... Barbara Gordon is a one-note character. She's really just there to get shot. And he felt that he needed to, because of how iconic she has become in the wheelchair, mm-hmm. she needed to give that scene more heft. And
she becomes Oracle.
Right. She becomes Oracle. She becomes a fan to many disabled yes. fans, mm-hmm. you know, because she's the first character. It's like, hey, look, she's in a wheelchair and she's still badass.
Right.
Right. And of course, they rebooted and they took that away from her because she can walk again. But anyways. So, Bruce Timm, unfortunately, yeah, all the good stuff gets taken away. What happens is Bruce Timm decides to build a relationship between Batman and Batgirl. Now, this is hinted at in Batman Beyond that, you know, oh, something happened between these two and that's why they're not talking. And then it's later revealed, oh, they had a relationship. Now, I personally think that's kind of disgusting. Batman, I see as the patriarch of the Bat family.
Yes.
And, you know, he kind of raised her
right.
to be who she is. You know, a relationship between Robin and Batgirl, that'd be perfect. That's right. What everybody
Didn't
wants.
That happen?
I believe it's been, you know, kind of off and on, but then they never really got together. And then she kind of got with Batman instead. So now, obviously, she can't go with Dick Grayson. So I think that was... I always felt kind of creepy about that, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's now been added into this story where they have a relationship, and that is what gives Batman the impetus to go after the Joker. Batman doesn't need a reason to go after the Joker, right? God. He doesn't need a personal reason, right? It's just about...
It's like the first Michael Keaton movie when they concocted that bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what's weird is, like, all the people involved in this, they've done it right for so many years. It's weird
yes.
that this would... Where they because
I saw
turn.
I walked by one of the giant DC or Batman booths at Comic-Con and I saw this trailer playing and I was like, oh yeah, I love that graphic novel.
Yeah.
So this kind of bums me out that you're saying that this.
Well, but here's the thing. Everyone is saying that is absolutely horrible. However, once you get past that, it is then the greatest Batman story you've ever seen on animated
all
film.
Right, all right.
You know, so yeah. It's this weird thing. It's like everything that was added to the story sucks, but then everything else is because it's Alan Moore.
Right.
And, you know, and Bruce Timm obviously has love for Batman. So that part of it is amazing.
I mean, that was groundbreaking when the original Batman animated series came out.
It was.
I'm watching it now with my kids too, as I reintroduce them to some of these shows,
yeah.
And I'm watching them again. I'm like, you know what? These are still really good. They're dark. They're gritty. They're interesting, and they're just really well made. Almost like 30-minute morality plays. Yeah. Some of them are.
You know, Vito had never seen the series, right? Those were years ago. And, you know, because, like, he was old. He was already in college at the time when they came out. And, you know, I was like, dude, this is an amazing series. So I showed him two episodes. I showed him Heart of Ice. and I showed him The Grey Ghost. Those two episodes, he was like...
Adam West.
Yeah, exactly, right? He was, after those episodes, like after Heart of Ice, he was like, oh my God, now I understand why you love this so much.
Right.
That Heart of Ice episode is amazing. And then to see The Grey Ghost, you know, all the nostalgia.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Even thinking back to it now, like I'm getting chills. It's so good.
Yep.
You know? So Batman, the animated series.
On a streaming service right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Batman the Animated Series is the best version of Batman, you know, complete version that you'll ever see.
Yes.
You know, you literally, you know, there's enough animated stuff that, you know, with the Justice League and the other Batman shows and stuff.
Justice League's fantastic, you know, too.
Yeah.
Justice League Unlimited, they're all good. And they're all part of the same universe.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you can actually see and you can go on YouTube and you can see the history of Batman, basically from when his parents get shot all the way to the end to Batman Beyond. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and
future
it's
Batman where Terry McGinnis takes over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so we now have this whole Batman life story that we can see in animated form, and it is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, DC animation has been amazing for years, although now with this you're like, what are you guys doing?
Right. Well, I think they put out too many sometimes. Like, you know, if they had more time to work on each one, like, cuz they're mostly good, I have to say, but there's some, they're definitely hit and miss. Like, I still think Flashpoint, Son of Batman, and Under the Red Hood are probably still my favorites out of all of them.
I think
there's a really good Superman one too. I can't remember the name of it now.
New Frontier is the best. I think New Frontier is amazing. Like, if anybody out there, if you want to see an amazing, what is it, Flash, Green Lantern story,
yeah.
New Frontier is the best thing you're gonna see. Oh. You know, Darwin Cook art. It's just a great, amazing. Like,
And they this one came out a while ago, but it's a I think it's four or five short films on one DVD. It's called Superman: Return of Black Adam. It's when Shazam first getting his powers, and Superman is teaching him the morality of having powers. It's amazing. It's so good, and it's only like 20 minutes long, and it shows more character in Superman and Shazam than any of the live action movies that have
been.
Like, it's talking about, like, you know, this, I'm getting bullied, like when, you know, the Shazam is a kid, is Billy Batson, he's like, I'm getting bullied. He's talking to Clark Kent, the reporter. He's like, and Clark Kent, he's like, you know, good is hard.
Yes.
And he goes through teaching him, he's like, it feels that way. And then they go and he gets his powers, like, why shouldn't I do whatever I want? You know, he's like, well, because you have a choice. You want to be good? You want to be a good person? Or do you want to be like him, like Black Adam? And Black Adam even says in like a great line, he goes, the power, it changes you, doesn't it? Like when he's talking to Shazam. And it's like, there's so many good moments in that. And there's like, I think there's a Green Arrow one. There's a Spectre one, and then there's a Jonah Hex one on this disc. It's great. Mm. So it's called Return of Black Adam. All right. That's our show.
That's our episode. We all got some great things from you guys about having a baguette award. Yes. We're talking about, that's an awful film. So we're going to start what we think is maybe a baguette.
The Golden Baguette Award.
The
Golden Baguette. And then Mitch McGrew wrote that we should do an end of the year award show.
Okay.
And I think we're gonna try to put that together. Like, our best film of the, you know, and my baguette actor of the year, whatever.
Worst movie I had to see with my kids.
Yeah. And then he said a food movie, which is a not great movie that I kind of liked.
Yeah, because you were in the food.
Because I was in the food theater. So thank you for that, Mitch. That's our show. Man, this was fun. It was great talking.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Everything. Talking Comic-Con, talking the state
comics
of the world.
Comics and movies. Yeah. Everything. And racism. We covered a lot of ground.
Yeah, gun issue. Yeah. We got it. Yeah. We did a lot. So Juan Manuel, where can people find you on the internet, your show, everything?
Great. So the show is called Comics on Comics. You can go to comicsoncomics.com, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. That is all Comics on Comics. I do a live show at the Hollywood Improv. It's monthly. Next week, or actually this Thursday, we actually have Satine Phoenix, we have comic book creator Mom, and we have some obscure comedian Chris Mancini. I don't know who he is.
Italian.
Yeah. You know. Some guy is gonna show up and he'll talk about it's my Comic Con wrap up show. So we're basically just gonna be talking about Comic Con, our experience, what we did, what we saw. It is at the Hollywood Improv. It is at the Hollywood Improv Lab, and it is
early show, 6 p.m.
Yeah, it is 6 p.m., 6 to 7. Happy hour drinks are in effect. So absolutely check it out. You can download the show on iTunes. Hopefully my Comic-Con show, which we shot last week, will be up sooner rather than later.
Nice.
I am also a part of this this Kickstarter that happened for a movie series called Night Shadow.
Oh, nice.
And it's this guy, Logan Cross, has created this whole superhero universe because he used to do like little short films, mm-hmm. and this is basically his third reboot of his universe, and he actually has money this time. So he contacted me about being the like story editor of the superhero universe.
Oh, cool!
And nice. And creating all of the connections between the characters. So he created like over 50-60 characters that wow. he's already shot videos for, and he has wow. this history for, and he's bringing me in to basically add all the comic book elements and make sure it works as a coherent universe. So hopefully that's something that I believe his first movie goes into production at the end of the year. And if it does well, it will spring out into many more things. So hopefully, you know, knock on the plastic, I will be working as an architect in creating this
that's
universe.
Awesome. That's awesome,
great.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Well, speaking of the lab at the Hollywood Improv, we'll be recording another episode of Pop Divas August 8th at 6 p.m. That's a Monday. Same thing. It's an hour, 6 to 7. It's free. They got drink specials, food specials, the whole thing. It's a great little room. It's a 50, 60 seat room. And that show, Pop Divas, of course, is on iTunes. We've done 3 episodes thus far. Thank you to
all. Have you been recording that live? Have you been going on Facebook
live? Always. What do you mean?
Like so what I've started doing, the second Facebook Live was announced, I with my iPhone, I set it up in the back and I stream the show live.
Oh.
So I'm now getting a new camera that should be here not this week, but for the next show. And, you know, I'll be Facebook Live, like 4K camera. And it was
so
going to be live.
So Facebook is just like a Periscope of?
Yes, except it stays there forever and it's going to your Facebook feed. So all your Facebook friends have it.
Oh, I see.
So this past weekend, I was going live from the floor. I was going live from outside. Mm-hmm. You know, live streaming is the future.
Yeah.
And I think that anytime you guys are doing a live show, set up a camera, go live on Facebook, go live on YouTube.
Right.
And yeah, absolutely.
All right. Okay. I'll do that. Also, I'll be headlining the Zanies in Rosemont this week, July 27th through the 30th. Check that out. We're doing an earbud screening.
Ooh.
It's not necessarily open to the public. It's
are we sure it is or it isn't? Or do we have like a definitive yes or no?
It's happening August 2nd.
No. That the public is or not open to.
If you really want to go, email us.
Okay.
Because it's at UTA.
That's fair enough.
We can't just have people just like.
Oh, okay.
So if you're in LA August 2nd.
Yeah, info@ comedyfilmnerds.com. Let us know. We'll put you on a guest list.
Yeah. And then, of course, LA Podfest, September 23rd through the 25th.
I can announce our first guest for our live show.
Yeah.
Cecil Baldwin from Welcome to Night Vale.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. Night Vale. Criminals in the festival. Criminals only doing a special show.
Yep. So is Welcome to Night Vale. It's only going to be seen on the stream.
That's only
it.
Seen on Ooh. The stream. They're not going to release it as a download.
No.
So you've got to come buy a ticket live or pay for the stream. Of course, the stream is now for sale. This is the earliest we've had it for sale. So it's $25. If you use coupon code CFN, you get 20.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some money at each show that has a coupon code, gets a little money. So check that out, you guys. I think that's it.
That is our supersized Comic-Con
supersized Comic-Con episode. We're going to release a Star Trek spoiler and also the episode that we recorded with Rick Myers at Comic-Con.
Yes.
That'll come out next week. Eric Jacobus is on that. We really kind of talk about the state of action movies.
Yep. And Neil's on it too.
Neil's on it too. So it's a bunch of guys recording at
After midnight.
Yeah. Yeah. At about midnight, 12:30.
In a hotel room.
In a hotel room in San Diego after just doing a 2.5 hour panel.
Yes. It was awesome.
So that's our show. Thank you so much, Juan Manuel.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you all you guys that have listened and sent us stuff in. We really appreciate it. We love your feedback. We love your jokes, your point avoiders, all of it.
Thanks for all the support.
Thanks for all the support. You guys make this really worthwhile because we're just a little business trying to keep our head above water, and there's a lot of giant corporations buying up podcast stuff.
Yeah. And not us. They're not buying us up.
No, we're not us. So we're just slugging to get by while huge conglomerates buy stuff up.
Yeah.
So thanks for supporting independent artists. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancine. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Rocha.